Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back. So I'm Shua Legra. If you're new to me, I'm the founder of Grace and Hope Consulting, where we empower people to achieve mental and emotional wellness, reach their full potential, and live fulfilling lives. So we are talking about resilience. Actually, everything we do here at Grace and Hope Consulting evolves around resilience, but I am inviting new friends and some older ones as well to kind of join the conversation. So this is your opportunity to get to meet new people, you know, hear about their story, what they do, and how all that relate to resilience and what nuggets of wisdom they have to share with us so that we can also be resilient in our own challenges. So today I have Liz with me. Liz, do you mind just introducing yourself and letting us know who you are and what you do?
Sure. Hi. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to join you. My name is Liz Bendit, and I am the founder and president of a company called thebombbox.com. And it is a self-care and gifting site for cancer patients. Nice. And all of the care packages were curated based on market research with other cancer patients to try to make sure that we provide cancer patients with functional, useful things that will help them during their treatments. And it was all based on my experience as a cancer patient myself. I have had cancer 4 times, four different cancers over the past 10 years.
Wow.
I'm just lucky that way. Wow. And and I did not live under I didn't live under like a big, you know, electronics tower. And I did drink a lot of tab in the 80s. That might be it. But other than that, there's no good markers. It's just really random luck.
Wow. That's just, I've heard people having cancer more than once, but usually the same type of cancer that comes back, you know, they were in remission. Nope. And then, you know, but for you, it's 4 different ones. Wow.
4 different cancers. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just, I guess, if you don't mind walking us through that journey, like what was the first one, you know, kind of what was going on? How did you find out? And what are the remaining 3 ones?
Well, I could go on and on. So I'll give you the very short condensed version.
That's all good.
So my very first cancer, and I date them based on like any mother, right? With the age of my children. My kids are in middle
school.
That's
the mom's calendar.
Right. Yes. Right. Wait, that's kind of like the world begins, right? You know, or at least my kids like to think, you know, life begins when they do. So my kids are in middle school and high school right now. So it gives you sort of a frame of reference. And the first time I had cancer, my son was a baby. Wow. And my daughter was a toddler, and we were at the swimming pool, and I was wearing a bathing suit, like, you know, anyone, and my son was having a nap on my chest. You know how like when babies do that and they kind of fall asleep on you. And I was in this kind of like contorted position to kind of keep him in my, you know, so he wouldn't slip off. And also he was really sweaty, it was hot. And my mom was standing next to me, and she saw that I had a mole in the upper part of my thigh. And I think it's a part of my leg that she probably wouldn't typically have paid attention to or seen had I not been in this very specific position. It turns out that mole was melanoma skin cancer. It was so large, it had to be removed in a hospital versus like just a Bose setting. And I had to have lymph node biopsy. And it was this crazy, crazy process where, you know, my mom nagged me to go to the dermatologist, and I kept blowing her off. I was busy. I didn't really, you know, who has time to go to the dermatologist, like pain in my butt. And I finally went, and the dermatologist took a little piece of skin off. And I remember this was on like a Friday before 4th of July weekend. Mm-hmm. And she called me the very first day after the 4th of July weekend, was on like a Tuesday, and said, you need to stop everything that you're doing. And we need to schedule a surgery before the end of the week. So I went from diagnosis to surgery in 4 days. It was crazy. And I was working full time. I had 2 small kids, like, you know, to have like your whole world turned upside down. And what they said was that the cancer spread, that type of melanoma, I probably had less than a year to live. And if it didn't spread, no big deal, wear some more sunscreen. It's like, those are kind of two really, you know, very different options. And so I had the surgery on a Friday, got the pathology report on Monday that I had not spread and I was fine. And so A year later, so then I stocked up on a lot of sunscreen. And my poor children, there's all these pictures of them in like long sleeve swim shirts and giant sun hats when they were little, because I was sun obsessed, still am a little. And and they, you know, just kind of went back to normal life. It was very weird. And then less than a year later, completely randomly, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And that one, I ended up in this very, very, very small percentage of patients. This happens to 2% of patients, where I had a crazy side effect called, that made me what's called hypoparathyroid. It means my body can't process calcium like a normal human. And so I won't go into all the gruesome details on that. Needless to say, it took about a year, to get myself healthy again. And it was really, hard, but that process really taught me that I had to be my own healthcare advocate, that you can't just kind of listen blindly to any doctor, because A, doctors don't always agree. And B, you know, you start to learn through this whole process that medicine is as much art as science, and that doctors make decisions based on what they genuinely believe is best for your healthcare. But at the end of the day, there's a fair amount of judgment that goes into deciding on a treatment plan. And that judgment is based on a lot of basically your risk aversion, you know, how risky, what are the odds that the cancer will return? And what am I willing to put my body through in order to gain, you know, a lower odds of recurrence, right? There's this kind of risk reward ratio. And that's something that's very subjective. And I think patients should, I learned through this whole horrible process to be my own advocate, right? That to kind of start to say, wait a minute, that particular treatment has a 5% odds of side effects and will only reduce my odds of recurrence by 2%. I'm good. The odds of recurrence are twice as high, or the odds of side effects are twice as high as recurrence. I'm good. I don't need to do that. Right. And so, whereas I think a lot of times cancer patients start to focus on, I will do anything and everything to reduce my odds, no matter how minute, and they end up kind of creating, I think, a lot of misery and unnecessary misery, no less. So, fast forward to 2015, now my kids are in middle school and, or in elementary school. And I had like kind of a little nudge on my nose that was kind of weird. And now me and my dermatologist are besties, right? Because I'm going back all the time for stand there naked while they scour every inch of your body. It's really one of the least pleasant experiences. And she didn't like this little nudge on my nose, took it off. It turns out it was basal cell skin cancer. So the good news is it's not a fast moving cancer. It's not super life threatening. The bad news was it was right in the chunk middle of my face. And so I had to have it removed. And the question became, how do you take skin off of the tip of your nose and then it's cover it bony back up? So, I mean, anyone's watching, I don't know. It's right here. You can't, I mean, and so what happened is I first went to a dermatologist in my dermatologist practice that works on faces, and he, or the plastic surgeon, I guess, where you go. And he said, okay, well, I'm going to cut a line from the inside of your eye all the way down, you know, to your chin. And then that's going to stretch out the skin and then help us cover up the hole on your face. And I said, okay, so I'm going to have, I'm going to be disfigured from this like non-threatening basal cell carcinoma. Now I'm going to have a scar face, it looks like a knife wound from my, you know, all along my cheekline, all the way down to my chin. Like that's really unappealing. Like, I don't mean to be super vain, but gosh, nobody wants to walk through life, right, with a giant scar on their face. So I said, is there another way? And he said, no. And I was like, well, you know, this isn't urgent. And I've just learned right through my whole process in the past two cancers that maybe I should be my own advocate, right? Yeah. And I started to interview other plastic surgeons in my area. And sure enough, there was one that had a different process. Now, mind you, his process required two surgeries. And his process was to create the scar right along the eye line, or like the bridge of my nose. And so this is why, like, you're looking at me in the video and you can't see it, because it was, he was such a good plastic surgeon. And like, I always think, well, you know, when things start to droop, this is the guy that's good with faces, right? You know, he knows how to work with faces. But he he had this process where he took the melanoma, you know, the infected skin off my nose, and then it left my face in an open bandage for 10 days while the skin kind of like, I guess, rested and stretched out. And then 10 days later, you go back in and he sews it up. And lo and behold, you don't have to, you can get away with a much smaller scar. Yeah. So let me just tell you, walking around 10 days with an open wound on your face, not my favorite thing to do, but I chose it, right? Like I was, and it was getting me out of this giant scar face scenario. So it was such a good trade-off for me. Again, learning, be your own advocate, you know, explore your other options. So then in 2017, diagnosed with breast cancer, and did, a lumpectomy and radiation and the radiation, you know, because I'm young and in generally good health, that everyone kept saying, oh, you're going to sail through this. It'll be no big deal. And so I didn't plan on being set back. I just made all of my radiation appointments for 7:45 in the morning. I wasn't going to inconvenience anyone. The only thing that that had to happen is that my husband would have to drive the kids to school. Other than that, I was going to work. I had planned to take no time off whatsoever. And I was just not prepared for how sick I would be. And and that was really where the idea for the bomb box came in, right? This idea that like, I need things like ice packs and lotion, and I need some alternative to bras because I can't wear those because I'm in so much pain. And what people were doing for us were bringing me all these kicking cancer tote bags and pink coffee mugs and lasagnas that nobody in my family would eat. And like, it just, it was so well-meaning, right? It was, and I don't mean it to be disparaging. Like it's awesome to be thought of and have friends and family care about you, but it was just a bunch of crap as opposed to like what you actually need. It's just that much more frustrating. It's just an obligation. So I thought there's gotta be a better way. And so in 2020, I created it. So that's my crazy story.
Nice. Well, I mean, not nice that you have to go for that, but nice that you not only find the strength to push through it, to become your own advocate, and then provide something for others who are dealing for some similar issues. And I often like to say that doctors and, you know, specialists and experts in whatever field it is, they're expert in their field. They're not expert in all bodies. Meaning, right. You know, even when the doctor says, oh, you have a fever, okay, or you have a headache, for example, you can take Tylenol, you can take ibuprofen, right? There's all these alternatives, you know, but you're the only one that can know if your body does better with Aleve or Tylenol, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and so that's why we need to be, you know, own advocate. I'm not a cancer survivor, but I have, you know, my share of health issues. And yes, so many times I've been called a non-compliant patient because I refuse treatment for certain things. And when I've done my research and I, you know, like you say, kind of weigh the pros and cons, it's like, okay, where do I go from here, right? It's like, okay, maybe I can live with this for a little bit. The more recent one, which, you know, people might laugh, was like, wow, you waited this long. But my wisdom teeth, literally, you know, they were not bothering me as much. Every once in a while, they were just kind of trying to pop. There was not enough room there and they were fine. My daughter is going to be 16 in April, and I believe she was about 6 when I was told that I need to remove my wisdom teeth. I literally just did it, like, maybe, I don't know, 2 months ago.
I think
didn't bother me. So, like, again, weighing those pros and cons. Go ahead, sorry.
I think that's completely true. I think that there's, and I think, you know, so much of what I've learned through my whole journey is surrounding yourself with medical care teams that match your personality. And there's so many different, when I had breast cancer, you know, a lot of friends of the family are in healthcare. And so they set me up with, the super difficult to get into radiation oncologist, not to be named, medical facility that very, very hard to get into, very premier. And I thought that this guy was one of the meanest human beings I've ever met. He was really dismissive. And I thought, you know what? Like, I don't care if he's well-known and researched and documented in every med. This is not someone I want to work with. I don't, I'm going to spend the next 5 years in appointments with this person. No, this is not who I choose to work with. And it was, I think, also very empowering, right? I think that when I participate in a lot of different forums for cancer patients and survivors. And I think it's very easy to succumb to feelings of being a martyr. Why me? How come this happened to me? oh, woe is me, life sucks. And I think that taking a little bit more control over your situation mm-hmm. by choosing your care team, by participating in your treatment plan, by being your own advocate, as I keep saying, to me is one of the best ways to avoid, I think, the really bad process, right, of behaving like a martyr. That's not helpful. It's much harder to overcome that than to overcome pain.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I think for everyone watching, kind of know that a lot of wisdom there. So when you're going through those health challenges, you know, continue to seek out, other options, doing your research. Yes. And
yeah.
I think it's also listening to that inner voice, like listen to yourself for you, because you know what is best for your body. Especially when you're doing research and try certain things.
This is the balance, right? Because at the end of the day, I did not go to medical school, and by no means am I, here or qualified to provide medical mm-hmm. advice to anyone. And I do think that we have to be careful to make sure mm-hmm. that we're listening. Because I don't want to suggest that doctors don't know.
Yeah, we're not saying don't go to your doctor, obviously, right.
But I think that the point is having a conversation with your doctor about the pros and cons of various treatment options, and not just, allowing yourself to be, I don't know how else to say this. I think that for me, I felt that it was very empowering to choose my treatment plan, to discuss mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. to understand if I choose to do radiation treatment, what does that do to my odds of recurrence? Okay, well, it goes from an odds of without it, odds of recurrence are, it was something like, I don't remember, 45% with it, drops down to 15. Okay, that's a good number. That's worth
right.
the trauma to me.
It's important to ask those questions for sure.
Right. And so I think being informed, whereas I think that we have to be really careful about using the word research as opposed to informed, right? Because I can read things on WebMD and I can read Wikipedia and all those things, but I can't really understand articles in Healthline, right? So that you've mm-hmm. got to rely on your medical care team for those kinds of issues. So I don't want to in any way suggest that patients should be developing their own care plan. I guess what I'm saying is that it should be in collaboration with, and that when you collaborate, you take back some control. Mm-hmm. And there's, to me, control is one of the very best ways to avoid the dark path of feeling like, a cog in the wheel of a medical establishment,
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And I also think that there's room for within Western medicine, there's a lot of great, there's a lot of Eastern medicine, things like essential oils and other kinds of herbs and things. And I'm not in any way suggesting that you use lavender essential oil instead of chemotherapy, but I'm saying if you're going through chemotherapy and you're super nauseous, there's some really great essential oils that soup that help with the nausea. So try that before you take a whole bunch, it can't hurt to try these kind of less invasive paths as you kind of navigate through your treatment. And I think I have found doctors that are really open to those conversations to me are the ones that are have better patient outcomes,
definitely. I so agree with you. I know my own journey was listening to what the doctor had to say, asking questions, and it's supposed to be a partnership, because at the end of the day, whatever decision that is made, you're the one that have to live with it, right? Yeah. Whatever medication you take and how it affects your body, whatever treatment or surgery, whatever it is that you undergo, you are the one who have to live with it. So you want to make sure that you're asking the right questions, that that you have a say. And
going to your doctor and saying, instead of saying I've done research, if you go to your doctor and say, I've done a lot of reading and here's what I'm learning and let's mm-hmm. discuss it. I do think that they are so much more open to that conversation than when you say I've done research, because research has a meaning in medical world.
You're right.
Not what we mean.
We're not doing scientific research here or clinical research. We're just gathering information.
Yes.
So that we're informed and then we can ask the right question. And then even when we have answers, it's okay to ask more questions, to get a second opinion until you're comfortable with which treatment you decide to follow. And so just if you mind, and thanks for sharing all of that, but I just wanted to we touched a little bit, like for you going from being that four-time cancer patient to making that shift to now want to offer this basket. I know you touched a little bit on that, what you those were needed, but what was that transition like emotionally from I'm the patient to now I'm going to empower other patients?
Oh man, that's such a good question. I mean, it was definitely very empowering. Right now is still very much a labor of love, right? Like I get so much satisfaction from emails and phone calls I get from, you know, caregivers and patients that tell me how helpful their bomb boxes have been. I feel a lot of pride. So if you're asking, you know, how do I feel about that? Like, I'm very, very proud of what we've done and what, you know, we've accomplished so far, and we have plans for the future. But that transition was terrifying, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I went from being a full-time marketing executive to an entrepreneur. I mean, we took our family's income and cut it in half. It was very, very, very scary. But at the same time, it just has made such a difference in our lives. I think yes, our family income has gone down. Mm-hmm. That's not awesome. But our flexibility, we've just gained so much, right? Mm-hmm. So beyond just the satisfaction of launching my own business, which is something I've been dreaming of doing since 2018, and you know, and working for myself and not for somebody else, because I've spent probably the past 10 years working at small to medium-sized businesses where I was working for other entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. Who had their own, you know, sets of quirks and peccadillos. And so now it's just me and there's no one to throw ideas off of. That was a huge transition. But it also has afforded me just the luxury of being able to work on my own schedule. So being able to, instead of having to knock out my workout at, 6:30 in the morning, because that's when it has to get done so that I'm in an office by 8:30 or 9. Now, if I decide that I want to work out a little bit later, I want to sleep in, I can run into the office in my workout clothes. Like, nobody cares. It's me. I'm in charge. I get to make those choices. If I want to run out in the middle of the afternoon or need to run out in the middle of the afternoon to take my kid to the dentist, I can. Mm-hmm. If I have an idea that I want to pursue on a Saturday afternoon, I can, and I do, and I don't feel so rigid about it. So having this flexibility of kind of all of my time is my time, and that I can, and I'm weaving in my personal and professional life in a way that I've never done before, has just been super empowering. I've loved that. That's been really good for me and for my family.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Definitely. Yeah. It's scary to do those new things, but then when you realize that what you need or needed, others also need. And I think, like you say, you embrace that fear, because the purpose of your purpose, what you're pursuing, the end goal, the end result is more powerful, right? More meaningful than maybe, that feeling of risk and, like you said, nerve-wracking, like, oh my goodness, what am I going to get myself into? And then even when there appears to be, like you're saying, how, you know, your family income went down, but this is more fulfilling, right? This is more
focused on doing this. Yes.
And there's more joy that came with it, giving out, dollars, like pretty much trading dollars for the more fulfillment. And that's something I think that more of us need to learn more to do, especially in the Western culture, right?
It's that, true. Money's not that's everything. You articulate that so well. It really was quite the trade-off. I mean, I traded off income for, emotional fulfillment. Mm-hmm. It has been so freeing. Once we wrapped our head around, now bearing in mind, we had planned for me to be an entrepreneur since about 2018. We've been saving money. We've been, it's not like I just fell off a cliff one day and said, okay, let's do it. I mean, this was a very deliberate planned process. And so I do think that helps a lot, but still, even planning for it is one thing, doing it is a whole other. So I do think planning absolutely helped me a lot. It helped me it helped me embrace the change. And I think that's also, I mean, some of this is also just built in, right? Like my husband and I joke, we're yin and yang in that way. Like I love change. I like doing things different. If something is new and different, I'm all in. I want to try it out. And my husband is, he likes things the way they are. He likes, you know, his standard process. He likes to know what time he's getting up, and he wants to know what the plans are. And, you know, he's much more happy with kind of the status quo. And so we balance each other in that way. You know, he keeps me a little bit more landed, and I get him kind of to push out of his comfort zone. So it's a good partnership in that way. Mm-hmm. But I do think that my embracing of change also, just that's my innate character trait, has been really helpful too. So I can't totally put it on, you know. I think my husband would have a much harder time, for example, with his personality type, transitioning to this lifestyle, whereas it's really worked well for me. So some of that is just personality.
Yeah, for you. Oh, awesome. And so how can one people connect with you? How can they have access to those care packets?
Well, visit the bombbox.com. It's the BALMBOX.com, and we have all sorts of care packages for every kind of cancer and surgery and radiation and chemo, and even just some really simple and lovely rest and recovery packages that I think would be welcome for anyone recovering from any kind of illness. Mm-hmm. And we are online and all the socials.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here today to talk about this, but also thank you for all that you do out there helping everyone else, you know, not just have, you know, find more comfort if you want in the midst of such, you know, that can be challenging and heartbreaking, overwhelming situations.
Thank you. No, it's cancer. You know, I like to say that there's been a lot more work in the past probably two decades on cancer treatment versus cancer cures. And so if there's anything I've learned, right, through my cancer journeys, is that while it sucks, you know, that so much of cancer is treatable. So before you believe, you know, if you're, any diagnosis is terrifying, but you still, there's so much work that has been done in the medical community to help make cancer more, may help us live with cancer, right, as opposed to attempting to cure it. So very, very lucky that I live in this decade.
Well, once again, thank you for everyone watching, listening. Feel free to share this out if you know someone who's going for cancer nowadays. You know, all of us know someone who was impacted or have been impacted by cancer, so definitely share this episode with them and this little segment to just inspire them that, you know, there are brighter days ahead. And thank you, Liz, for being that encouragement and kind of, you know, being that beacon of hope for others.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to meet you.
Same here. All right, everyone, be well.